Hey, everybody, it is Kim Sherwood. You are listening to Drunken Lullabies, and I'm getting drunk with Dustin, so stay tuned.
Hey everybody, what's up? It's The Voice, and I am back with episode 124 of Drunken Lullabies. It is the middle of April, the Ides of April, the 15th. That's a thing, right? I don't know. I feel bad that only March has the Ides and everybody else is left out. Let's kill somebody and then we'll remember it for always. But I'm on location at Distill. It's been a while. You guys know Stained at all?
No, we always,
thank you. Yeah, that's anytime somebody says it's been a while, you have to. Been a while.
Well, we were doing proper radio etiquette.
I know.
No one
I
was
know.
Saying a word until you.
And I appreciate it. I appreciate it. But
I didn't want to fuck up the mastery that you just laid down.
It
with
felt
that
a little beautiful. Awkward, but we've got some special guests here. The guys from the Brew Crew comedy tour. And I'm going to let these three gentlemen, and I use that word very loosely, I'm going to let them introduce themselves so you get familiar with their voices. And we're going to start counterclockwise. So take it away.
Yeah, that'd be Ricky at this point.
Oh yeah, my bad. Oh, I haven't even drank yet.
You're the special guest.
I am. All right, so counterclockwise, take it away, sir.
Hi, I'm Ricky Glore, part of the Brew Crew Comedy Tour.
Hi, I'm Billy DeVore, and I'm part of the Brew Crew Comedy Tour.
I am Kim Sherwood, and I'm a guy hanging out with the guys on the Brew Crew Comedy Tour.
Wow. You're on the tour.
I am on the tour,
You're on the tour.
I'm on the tour.
You've done as many dates on this as everybody else.
That's true.
Not me.
Excellent. Well, we're here at Distill. It's actually April 7th while we're recording this. Mere hours away from your guys.
If we need alibis.
Yeah. It is on tape.
If they find a body in the lake.
It's approximately 4:30, but I've been with them since 4. They have a show later tonight, sold out weeks in advance. So yeah, like if I warned you guys weeks ago, the tickets were low and I said get on it, they're not going to last long, and then yeah, by last week they were gone. You have to buy them on StubHub or something.
Awesome.
We made it.
We've got five messages on our drive up here today.
Yeah, people are looking for tickets at this point. So,
really?
Yeah, if this came out in live version, we would say, hey, you know what? You get them on the black market.
And everyone's scratching their arms like, you got some tickets,
you got
man?
Hey, man, you got some more of that deal stuff.
You're going to pull up. We're going to see the guy in the parking lot with the I need tickets sign. It's like, I made it.
Yep. It's the Blue Crew or the Blues Clues comedy tour. Like, man, those are knockoffs. Dude, don't buy them.
Why lie? I need tickets for comedy.
Peanuts, water.
Now, I think people can probably figure out by the name what the tour is all about. But you know what? I don't know clockwise from counterclockwise. So why don't we let you guys break it down and just explain what it is you guys are doing.
We can break it down.
Well, it started, Ricky and I started doing comedy around the same time, and we both worked as house MCs at a Funny Bone in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Okay.
Ricky disappeared on us and went to Chicago to do what he did for a while.
Did you not have an alibi then?
No, I did not fail. I pivoted to improv, sketch, did some stand-up up in Chicago at like Zany's and the Funny Bone there in Second City, but then got back into used my college degree for theater and wrote and directed musical theater and plays at some like small storefront black box theaters.
Yeah.
But then I came back.
Yeah, and then so he comes back. I didn't know he was back permanently until I saw him in a basically a three-turned haunted house that they had makeshift made at darkness. And what was your costume? Were you?
I was Jason Voorhees.
Yeah,
you Jason. Was it a musical haunted house? Because that could be awesome.
Well, so I mean, some of the storefront theater plays that I did. My biggest one was a parody of A Nightmare on Elm Street called A Nightmare on Back Street, a boy band musical parody.
Good lord!
So it was Elm Street,
but it makes you kill yourself.
Yeah,
people. people loved it.
They all drowned in hair gel.
Yeah. But no, it was just, it was at this brewery in Bellevue, Kentucky, right across the river from Cincinnati, that was so kind and willing to kind of do what any weird things we wanted to do, mm-hmm. Theater-wise, and to help them, the owner always turns their small back room into a haunted house, like a maze.
Nice.
And so my wife and I helped him with that, and then I kind of got reacquainted with Kim, and he's like, you know, they do an open mic here on Thursdays. You should come do it some night. And I was like, I haven't done stand-up in like 3 years.
Yeah, but he was good when he did it, right? So I knew him when he was coming up, watching him grow, and you know, before he disappeared on me and ghosted out, I was like, that guy, you know, he's got some talent. And so when he came back permanently, we came up with this idea over beers, and since we weren't getting work in the club, I wasn't really pursuing it. Ricky didn't know who to contact.
Yeah, I didn't know anybody else because the Newport on the Cincinnati Funny Bone we had both worked at had dismantled.
Yeah. Well, I would also think if you remove yourself from any kind of scene anywhere, things change frequently.
Yes.
You know, and jumping back into it, it's like, yeah, people that you knew and were established have either moved on or, you know, shit, could be dead. Who knows?
Well, right. And so a club that I had always loved when, you know, back in the day, 13 years ago, was Go Bananas, which is in Cincinnati. It's Montgomery area. And coming back, I was like, all right, I need to start working on smaller batches of sets. And the one of the coolest things Go Bananas has is a pro-am night on every single Wednesday.
Okay.
You can go see like 10 to 20 of the best local comedians. And actually, that's
not always all the best.
I didn't know Billy and Billy DeVore.
Yeah, it's
Billy
me.
Billy DeVore, The Four. And I did one of those. Kim and I started working on our sets for this tour. And Billy was on a lot of those nights, and we're like, oh, that guy's fun.
Okay.
Like, yeah. And he's a great, great comic. He would be great for these brewery shows that we're setting up in vineyards and anywhere there's alcohol. Mm-hmm. And even if the pay is not that great, if they're
there's alcohol.
Bar tabs.
Yeah, yeah. We're fine.
But since we started at this Darkness Brewery in Kentucky, the idea was like, well, let's just reach out to breweries. Let's make this a theme. And what we found out was a lot of breweries, I mean, this one is completely, you know, self-serving, unbelievably beautiful, right? Yeah. But a lot of breweries.
This is like the Cloud City.
Yeah, this is exactly what it is. And so, like, a lot of these breweries, hey, they were doing great on beer. You know, they bought somebody's garage and put brewery equipment in here. They have a food truck for food, but they have no entertainment.
Right.
And so they're starving for entertainment to keep the people there. Because a lot of people will bar hop, you know, local breweries. Right. Hey, let's have a beer, you know, down here, and then we'll go out after that. Well, this was a way to keep them there. And the response, and Ricky could probably talk a little bit more to this, was just amazingly overwhelming right off the jump as far as, yeah, come on in, let's do this.
To get tasting some beers here soon, I'll give the abbreviated. I think what says it the best is one brewery we did in up in northern Ohio, an older man after the show. And that's the greatest thing about breweries is it's ageless.
Oh, yeah.
I have to be old enough to drink.
Yeah. Typically, they're at least 21.
Yeah, yeah.
But you hope.
Some of the houses, they're like, all right, you can be 18 and up, and we serve food, and we have other drinks, and blah, blah, blah. You can be there for the show.
This one had a daycare.
This one did have a daycare. green room. It was hilarious.
So watch Mommy and Daddy get drunk and play in the green room for a while, in the toy room.
And they get the blues.
Before he hits me.
They have the Blue Clues comedy tour performed for them, so it all
find my keys,
together.
Kids. It's the game. But when we were there, an older gentleman after the show came up to us and was like, first off, I want to tell you, love the show. He's like, second off, you know what this is? You know what breweries have become? And we're like, no, what? He's like, breweries are the modern day coffee house.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And that made, and I don't know why we hadn't thought about, but that's almost a great way to promote it, was take a chance on young artists. And hopefully, you know, we come in, we do our show our weekend. Hopefully we come back and you liked it. But one of the coolest things I hope for these breweries we're doing shows at is that it is allowing them to let their creative community that's around there to start taking chances and being like, oh, they're hosting comedy nights?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe they'll let me on a Tuesday, not one of their bigger nights, but come in and help poetry, you know, my guitar or my improv troupe or do an art show like paintings. So, like, I would love to see that that's what breweries kind of form into.
Yeah, definitely. And what you said that gentleman said, you know, breweries are the new coffee houses. It's funny you mentioned that. I'm part of a beer podcast network called the Hopped Up Network, and we were actually having this big group discussion in our feed, and somebody mentioned that. We got into the whole discussion of, like, whether kids should be allowed in breweries, and some people are very against it because it's like, if I'm saying bad language and I'm drinking mm-hmm. beer, like, I don't want to have to filter mm-hmm. myself because you brought a kid in, which, again, I can understand. But as a parent,
you should comedy.
Yeah.
That's always something. Yeah. But hey, I got this great set. Oh, there's kids in here. Outstanding.
But more and more breweries are allowing kids to come in because they serve food and stuff, like you said. And it's becoming more of a place people congregate and like a social club.
I think breweries, you know, a lot of these, some of them, you know, this, like Kim said, this is the this is the Trump International version.
Oh, don't necessarily lump us in.
No.
We stay light on the politics.
This is the Mar-a-Lago of the breweries. But like, this is huge, and it's got its own fucking lake right behind us. It's beautiful. Some of them we've done have been glorified garages.
Yes.
Oh, I've been to breweries like
some
that.
Some of the coolest, you know, and weirdest.
And some of them are tucked back in the middle of the woods.
Yep.
And you have no cell phone service, and you're like, hope nothing goes sideways. Well,
we're going to play some banjos now.
Yeah, there's that movie called The Green Room with Patrick Stewart, if you've seen it.
I have not.
It's about this punk band that goes through and plays this little bar.
Oh, I did see that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's creepy.
And then basically they get trapped, and it's about escaping.
Huh. I'll have to look that up.
But, yeah, so what's cool about these little places that we go to is that by the end of the night, we are hanging out with the town.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, it is, they, as Kim said, thirsty for a show. 40 minutes might be away from them in the mall and the metropolitan area where they're going to stuff. And they are more appreciative of the entertainment than I've gotten at any club show.
Yeah, because a lot of clubs will basically paper the room sometimes in order to get the numbers up, right? So people are like, oh, well, let's go to the club. And it just doesn't make it that special experience for somebody. And when you've got somebody that traveled 4 or 5 hours come in here, I mean, they're hungry for that entertainment.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you guys are hungry, or I guess thirsty for some beer.
My palate's hungry.
And we've got a brand new beer from Distill. We're featuring nothing but Distill beers because, hey, usually we do a sponsor spotlight at the end, but when we're recording on location, you got to drink nothing but. So this is the experimental series pilot number 5, and it is 7.1%. It's
giant.
You know. It's supposed to have some kind of peach, pineapple, melony flavors. Sounds like a
fraternity trash can.
Pineapple, peaches.
We're just going to put it all in there and throw some Everclear on it.
Well, yeah, just point punch.
It is peach. Experimental,
I definitely
yes.
smell peach.
So it's a newer one. Mm. I have not had it yet. There's only like 117 check-ins currently, but this is available on draft here at Distill and also in cans.
Are you in Untappd? Is that the app you're looking at?
Yes, I am.
I love Untappd.
It's the only way I can keep track of all the shit I have drank. And next week, it's going to be getting put in the overload because I'm going to a beer fest.
Oh,
so I usually have to just take a picture of the list and I check them in after the fact because I don't want to be on my phone the whole time, but there are some that I believe get lost in the haze. And I'm not talking about the you know, clear way you look through a beer here. But
are we supposed to have taken?
Yeah.
Okay. I already did.
Try it out.
I'll finish it.
And
I'll take it.
I'm fine.
All right.
Feel free to enjoy at your leisure. This is our first beer. We have 4. The next round, we're going to do a side-by-side because it's the same beer, but one of them has some extra stuff going on.
What does that mean?
One of these beers is not like the other.
I got chunks in mine.
So what's your guys' go-to styles for beer? I'm assuming you like beer if you're on the Brew Crew comedy tour.
Hate it. Don't like it. I'm a Crystal Light guy.
Yeah.
I can tell by your figure.
Yeah. My figure says, this guy loves flavored water.
Pepsi Clear.
Pepsi Clear.
You still got that Pepsi Clear?
Excuse me, you got any Coke, new Coke back there? That new old Coke?
Oh, yeah, no, and we get a new shipment every week.
Nah, nah, nah.
Nah, 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 nah. New no Coke. Coke. New Coke. Late 80s.
Bits.
I love all... I drink with the seasons. You okay. know? So...
Stout season is over now.
I had KBS on...
Oh, nice.
I still have some in my house. I have two in my pantry that are going to sit there for a year.
Yep.
I just finished up with my double IPAs, which was awesome. I drank with me and my fiance and I, we drank 5-6 packs of Hop Slam, maybe 6.
Good God, man.
Yeah, we get after it.
It was the best Thursday ever.
My buddy just came in from Seattle. He brought in 50 pounds worth of beer from Seattle and it's brief.
Did he drive?
Is that how they measure it out there? I just go like cans or bombers.
Well, he had pounds.
I guess if he checked in luggage.
Yeah, that's true.
For luggage for flights. So he's I wrapped everything in t-shirts. I was like, this is 50 pounds. And brought it out and had some crazy awesome beers. But mostly so now we're into stout season. I'm getting ready for some Gozes.
Excellent. Well,
some sours.
You're in the right place for that kind of beer. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I'm not. It's my first time.
This style. Okay. Of beer, Goza and sours. That's what Distill is known for. We aren't drinking a lot of those, but they are available downstairs. They've got the Wild Sour series is what everybody started recognizing the Distill name for. And it's expanded. They started local, and obviously you can tell from this kind of facility, they didn't just stay local. Now available almost half of the country.
That's
now
great.
Stocks distilled beer mostly on East Coast, all up and down the Midwest, and starting to edge out on the West.
In Cincinnati, we have a place called the Party Source down there, and it is like the Walmart for alcoholics.
Oh, it's amazing.
It is probably a football field of just booze, liquor, beers,
everybody's
just anything.
In pajama pants.
You got it. And slippers.
Okay. And it's employee-owned, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I'll have to look for it there. As well,
or ask for it there if they don't have it. Get them, start shipping it.
Always ask if they don't have it because always looking for new markets and stuff. Yeah. So, Ricky, what do you typically
grab? To go for a high alcohol content and really sip. So, something like a thick, like you were saying, like a stout or a porter.
Yeah,
if I'm drinking to drink more than 4, I would go for like an amber.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's an in between a light and a little darker of a heavier beer. Mm. I don't have the knowledge as Billy though. I mean, you were dropping like Rain Man terminology.
Yeah,
definitely got to drink the KPS.
I got KPS in the pantry. What else? I got that 3 Floyd Sour they put out last year. It's getting nice and weird.
Yeah. Well, you guys are going to be performing next to tons of sours that are aging for.
Now that's so those
plus.
Those barrels are actually full in there.
Those are full.
Is that right? Giddy up!
That's awesome.
And there's a whole lot of different ones in there too. You got sours. You've got like the Dos Vidania, which is the Russian Imperial Stout. Oh. There's.
I think this one cracked open. I got to drink before it drowns the audience.
I was gonna say if you talk to the right people. They may pull some nails and let you try some stuff. On my first tour, I got hooked up with some stuff. It's like, this has been sitting in the barrel for 3 months. It's still got like another 6 to go before we're ready to pull it. But you can try
if
a little bit now, see where it's getting.
The nail pulling thing happens, we have to film it. It has to be slow motion and look like a sexy girl coming out of a pool video.
Yeah.
And like play like, she's my cherry pie. And just pouring down my throat.
Well, now that I've got that mental picture, let's introduce our band of the week. And they are the Ongoing Concept. And they are on Solid State Records, which is a label that I was a huge fan of back in the day. Hardcore label out of Washington State. And they are a rock band from Spokane, Washington, breaking the barriers of genre-thumping critics. These guys mesh heavy rock, pop hooks, and extreme riffing that create a blue-collar-like sound that matches no other. The Ongoing Concept takes influence from the likes of Don Brocco, The Chariot, and Inner Shakira. I don't know. They're entering something. holding a more cultured background and having a worldly taste. These guys, they scream and yell, but they got hooks and grooves. I really enjoy their new album, Places, came out last year on Solid State. And we're going to play three songs from that album through the course of the show. And as a special treat, the guys actually recorded some commentary videos for some of these new songs and hooked us up. So we're going to play a little bit of their thoughts about these songs. They sat around a table, drank some beers, much like we are, and just talked about the record they made. So we're going to let the guys take it away, and then we're going to hear the song Shake It from the ongoing concept here on Drunken Lullabies.
Shake It.
Shake It.
Yes. This is it's one of those songs that I wrote randomly.
Track three. Another song two.
Yep. Omnisphere is a great plugin. Love it. I was doing some cool stuff with that.
It's the funnest bass line of the whole song. Or whole album.
It's groovy. It's very, very groovy.
Sexy.
My uncle really liked this song.
I really like your uncle.
Hey, you know, we kind of, sometimes we come over for practice and we'll walk in on Dawson dancing up in the music room to gospel music.
Okay. That's gospel music. That's kind of why we wrote this song. You know, totally. I love gospel music. I am a very type, I love groovy stuff.
Austin likes to shake it to gospel music. Mm-hmm. That's what the song's about.
This was just one of those songs where I wanted to kind of have a similar feel to Feel, which is from Handmade. And it felt good, so I just kept with it. There's a really cool funky little line. I used some pedals to make that happen. It's like, I don't know. It's like a weird EQ thing that I did. Also, it's in
H. I haven't figured out how I'm going to replicate it live yet.
Yeah, it's going to be weird.
We have not played this song live.
Is this an A sharp? I think this is an A sharp.
Is it? No, it's E-flat? In B.
Is it in B? No, pretty. I think it's an A sharp.
It's an A sharp?
This is always my worst range. It's the highest range I can go, okay?
But it's fun. We write songs in too many different tunes.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah, that part, I love that part. And this is one of those songs that doesn't fade out. It's cool.
We didn't cop out on this one.
Yeah. Cool. That song's one of my favorites.
I'll be honest, it's my least favorite of the album, but it's still a good song.
Okay, cool.
Indeed.
Everyone has their own things. I think it's one of my favorites. But a couple songs, and I'm sure Andy will now say, these are my favorite songs, because...
I actually sing on them.
I actually sing on them, okay.
Oh, you only get one chance, you gotta take it. World and more, you gotta shake it. You get one chance, you gotta take it. Everybody's gotta get it.
All right, and that was the ongoing concept with Shake It. Again, not to be confused with Shake It Off. Totally different song. But we've got some more beer to drink, and this is another distill. This is the Deadhead IPA Series Soundboard. It is a session IPA at 4.3%, and it says, our Deadhead IPA Series melds the strong vibe of music that we love with the beer we love to drink, elevating both into a higher state of consciousness. Our Soundboard Session IPA is a melody of Citra and Simcoe hops playing off light but balanced malt for a sublimely mixed beer that is sessionable and blissful music to all the senses. Cheers. Now, that is the beer on the left. And then, on the right, it debuted yesterday as part of the Firkin' Friday series.
Firkin' Friday.
This is the Deadhead IPA series soundboard with watermelon, honey, thyme, and HBC 462 hops.
Ooh.
It is just those things added to the soundboard. And I haven't tried either one, so I thought it'd be fun to do them side by side and see if those flavors come out. But Firkin' Friday, they do it Friday, if you figured that out.
Yeah.
And it's, do you guys know what a firkin is?
No.
It's not a pubic wig.
It's not a merkin.
No, that's
my
merkin.
Yeah. That's merkin Mondays here.
Yes.
Okay.
Not nearly as popular.
No, I hear it gets pretty hairy.
Oh!
I gotta go. I'll see you guys.
That's Billy DeMore. Get
me. Yeah. I gotta go.
We'll just play that at the show tonight. We don't need you.
Yeah, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So, a firkin, you may see it behind the bar. It looks kind of like a little tiny barrel, just a little keg. And that's essentially what it is. It's just a smaller batch.
A little cask?
Yeah. And it's just, it usually lasts a week.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes not even that. It just depends. But they do a new one every Friday, and Distill puts a fun little video up on their Facebook page to introduce it. Mm-hmm. Our friend Tim is the mad scientist behind these, and he does those videos where he'll be sitting in front of that fireplace downstairs and like, oh, hello, I didn't see you there. And then he introduces the beer. And people are supposed to come out, get their fish and chips at Distill on Friday and drink some of the Firkin beer. So it's Saturday. They left some for us, and we're going to try it.
Oh,
but
so
first, I want to try the regular one. Just
regulators.
We got to do the litmus test.
Last time I drank out of a cask, I was at Flat 12 in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I've been there.
It's awesome.
Yeah, and they very cool space. I enjoy it. It is like drinking in a barn.
Yeah.
But in a good way. But
in a good way, yeah. There's not hay everywhere, and it doesn't smell like horse
turds. And they had dogs running around and stuff. It was,
it's cool.
Yeah.
But I was doing a show there, and I was getting ready to go on, and I got they had a ghost pepper aged IPA in a cask.
Oh, okay.
And I was about to go on, and I had some left, and for some reason I chugged
horrible idea.
And my nose was just running throughout my whole set.
Yeah.
And I was like trying to catch it in my thin little mustache, trying to catch like that. Like, I hope they don't see it. Oh, and I'm just like, oh, it's gross. But
yeah.
So hopefully this is a better experience than that.
I think it will be.
It's very smooth.
Mm-hmm.
Very light. I would like to know the person who writes these descriptions for these beers.
A lot of times that's our friend Jeremy.
I'd like him to write my bio. What I'd like.
He's great.
Jeremy, if you're looking to branch out and do some extra
work. Kim
goes
down your throat very nicely. If you're looking to have a big swallow of Kim.
Yeah.
Plenty of head on this one.
You don't want to get that Kim all over your face. You don't want a Kim shot all over you.
He's very light, refreshing, and easy to handle.
But a spicy little number if you have two.
And I'm getting the watermelon, oddly enough, which...
Is it come from a big drink? A bigger drink of it?
Ah,
the one on the right.
I'm doing the one on the right now.
Oh,
which is the
that's where they put all the funk du jour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and watermelon in beers, in just my experience, it's usually all artificial.
Oh, like
extracts and stuff like the
100% there.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah.
damn, what's the, I don't know, Ballast Point has a watermelon one, and it's really strong, and it's not that good.
Are you thinking of Hell or High Watermelon from 21st
Amendment? Well, that, I've had that one as well.
I like it.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's I've never really had a watermelon beer that, I'm like, man, I love that.
This is a weird comment, but it doesn't, you know, on the first one, that Pilot, I smelled it, and I was like, oh, yeah, I smell the peach and mm-hmm. the pineapple. This one, if you smell it, doesn't smell like watermelon.
No, but the taste.
I like. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would rather it be in more in the taste and less in the smell, but...
And I wonder, because mine the beer is not the same temperature. So
oh, look, and there's Alex Maffei.
Maffei.
What's up?
Grab some beer.
Hello.
How are you doing, sir?
Good, man. Long time no see.
Long time.
He's just hijacking the show now. Yep. Big shot here.
Alex.
Nice to meet you. Swinging that big dick around perch here.
The last time I was in here recording was with Alex and Edwin and... Big Will.
Edwin.
I believe.
Like, who am I say?
Edwin. Yeah, Edwin.
Yeah.
Mustard. Don't be ridiculous.
It's getting crazy in here, I must say.
Not that Edwin.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that you knew, though.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Mad Hatter.
I do some really random impressions around the house. Carol Channing, Edwin, you know.
Channing, yeah. Flooded.
We broke out one episode in, I don't know if you guys are, yeah, that too. Alice in Wonderland, there was a made-for-TV movie back in the 80s.
Martin Short, and Whoopi Goldberg?
No, that's the one from the 90s. There was one in the 80s, and Carol Channing was in it, and she goes full on Broadway and starts singing a song about
what the kids
jam tomorrow. You can jam yesterday and you can jam tomorrow, but you can never jam today. And I busted out in the full Carol Channing mode and sang the song. And me and one of my friends thought it was hilarious, but like nobody else got it. And it's like, sometimes I'm okay with that. If I get one person to laugh,
well, and also,
it's worth it.
I'm like that with my jokes.
It's like, we'll be here on. But that's the kind of joke to me. It's there are a bunch of those in Mystery Science Theater 3000 where if you're watching it with a group of your friends and you're like, I know, get that. And they're like, what is that from? And you explain it like you just did. If they then go like, now look it up on YouTube, they'll be like, oh, that was funny because it did sound like that. Or my friends are assholes.
Yeah. Well, maybe a little bit of both.
A little bit of both.
Well, two episodes ago, we got into a big discussion about comedy. We were promoting the show tonight, and you know, I'm a big fan of comedy. So we started talking about our comedic Mount Rushmores. Now, I don't know if this is a topic you guys have ever
had. I love the way that's phrased. I've never heard it that way. Usually it's just so generic that it's just like, who are your inspirations? Who's your favorite stand-up?
You get four. You know, because there's four presidents on Mount Rushmore, but like, as far as building your comedic sensibilities, your influences, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be your favorites, but just this has got me to where I am. And I mean, while you guys are brainstorming, I can repeat what mine was that day. It was George Carlin, Mitch Hedberg, and then I had Richard Pryor, the Pride of Peoria. And then my fourth is kind of an unconventional pick, but he's one of my favorites, Jimmy Pardo.
Yeah.
I actually just got to see him last night at the Jukebox in Peoria. It was fantastic.
Do you find it interesting that you only have one living up there? And what does that say about when you're
Because I had a lot of
into your
honorable mentions that just didn't, you can only get four. So it's like Patton Oswalt was almost there, and you know, like David Cross.
Do you think you'll appreciate them more when they aren't producing more material? You can look back and be like, that was their career, and that's why I can pick them, is because I know how they begin, how they begin. Only two beers.
Gee whiz.
Well, how they began, their middle, and then their end. And like all the comedians you mentioned, I mean, prior, you know, kind of deteriorated.
Yeah, and that was something I talked about, like comparing him with Carlin. Like Carlin was still producing new material up until his final year, whereas Pryor literally lost his voice and was unable to for like the last decade. So who's to say what he could have continued to produce over the years? But those are like my four favorites, I guess. So,
but going back to what Ricky said, you know, I think there is something to be said about the comics that are still living, and if you stick them up there and to watch them fall
right.
in
let's,
recent
let's do
years.
2 years ago. Louis C.K., oh. yeah. Bill Cosby,
right, yeah. right.
Jeremy but Piven,
my friend
Richards.
Yeah, my friend yeah. actually did yeah. still, he said, I know it may not be a very PC thing to do. He still put Cosby up on there, but again, it's more like
it's how you
latter
is
day.
The person
yeah.
can you
separate the art
we
from
all
the person
talk about this between
yeah.
you know, like Tom Cruise, Gibson,
mm-hmm.
And you know, Cosby, Woody Allen. Can you, are you the kind of person, Kevin Spacey,
yeah.
my friend, love Baby Driver, Kevin Spacey stuff,
Baby
hit.
Driver,
he's
yeah.
like
fantastic.
I'm not gonna buy the DVD.
Yeah.
He's like, I can't watch it without that taking me out of it. And I'm like,
I'm kind of able to separate
yeah, 100%
it. Yeah, I don't know. I've just always
okay
been
me,
that way.
For like Cosby and Woody Allen, there's a lot of their stuff I don't like already. Like, yeah. I just didn't care for. And it's not like, see, and I was right. That's why I didn't like. I'm just like, Cosby stuff, I like. There's stuff I like of his. There's stuff I don't like. Allen, like, the stuff I still like, the Gibson, you know, Lethal Weapon, like, I'm going to fucking love those movies till the end of day. Tom Cruise, still like him in the Mission Impossible.
Oh, Tom Cruise, I found out just looking through his filmography. It seems like he's done tons of movies, but he really is selective and doesn't do that many. He may be my favorite actor. I've literally seen every movie he's ever done, but he's fucking Looney Tunes. And, you know, I said I'm able to separate things. I do have a breaking point. Like, if Kevin Spacey raped me, I probably would not be a fan. But
I might be more of a fan.
It's the degrees of separation.
Right, you know, like,
I'm never washing my butt.
I like Anthony Rapp, but, you know.
I want to talk to you about being in my House of Cards.
Yes. So, yeah, that's, it's different for everybody. But, so who are your guys's?
I love the framing
fours.
Of the question.
Yeah.
That's a cool way to do
You're
it.
You're going to Bismarck, North Dakota, or wherever it is, and they're building a monument.
I can give you mine.
Okay.
Mine are going to be unconventional just because I look at them as I look at more modern and the guys who are working now.
Ghostface Killer?
Yeah, Ghostface. I'm going to give you Eugene Merman for his likability and just the willingness to do anything and be as creative as he is on stage with what he does. Rory Scovel. For his ability to seem like he's riffing and the improv aspect that he brings to stand-up and how he changed it. Sean Patton for his likability, too, and the fact that he can just command a stage. And then lastly...
Are you going to throw in a classic?
Bill Burr. Just because of the aggressiveness.
Oh, very aggressive.
And those guys shape like how I write when I think... Like how I would want to do something, and those guys influence me.
You want to know how to take down a heckler? Just YouTube some Bill Burr videos.
Yeah, no kidding. Just YouTube Bill Burr Philadelphia.
Yeah, the Philadelphia one is classic.
17 minutes. You guys build a statue for a fake fucking character out front, and you're out here booing. You guys are pieces of shit. 16 minutes, and I'll tell you.
Yeah,
that was great. Fantastic.
It was so good.
Oh, so good. So, yeah, those are mine.
Okay.
I guess, you know, for me personally, I think, you know, I grew up with Eddie Murphy. That Raw album that came out was just something that, you know, it was one of those where you shouldn't have it because of the language. And, you know, you get a hold of it through Columbia, you know, buy 16 tapes for a penny and then you'd never pay them type of thing.
And for Eddie and you, so like Delirious, you were introduced
to
Eddie on SNL. So you had a tape?
No,
you didn't see. I'd seen him yet.
I'd seen like of him, but the tape really kind of brought him.
Well, I was gonna say it was the Tale of Two Eddies, which he introduces in Delirious, and someone's like, "Buckwheat." He's like, "Oh, your motherfucker's stupid."
I'm actually wearing my buckwheat.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's perfect.
That's what prompted me actually.
And so he says, he's like, "If you wanted to see that Eddie Murphy, you could have saved $60 and seen me done that shit for free on Saturday." Mm-hmm.
That's right. But I think the age at which he exploded, he was only what? 19. Like 19 when he did that album. I just think, you know, to take that and to relate it to the number of people that were, you know, that bought that album or that were in that audience, I think is just insane at the time.
And he takes down Cosby.
He does.
He was on a throne.
He was. Yeah. Yeah. He did. He took down Cosby. And just his methodology in which he told the joke. And I didn't know anything about jokes at that particular point. I just thought I enjoyed it. So I thought that, you know, just the way that album came out and the way that it kind of grabbed me a little bit, I thought was pretty awesome. George Carlin, just for his ability to write and analyze words and to put them in the right places, you know, always appealed to me. Mm-hmm. I saw him, you know, before he died in one of his last, you know, hoorahs, and that was a pretty memorable experience for me. You know, Robin Williams, just for his ability to be unbelievably just crazy and just
unhinged.
Even though it's more, you know, it's scripted, but his ability to be a very physical comic. Uh-huh. I mean, I enjoy that quite a bit. Just for the, you know, what I would say to Ricky, you know, people come to see a show, not a tell, you know. So if you can show the joke, way better than if you just told the joke. Mm-hmm. And I really found that. The other one is Brian Regan. I don't know, you know, his ability to take something just so mundane and to just make it his own. I thought that was just, I think he's brilliant with the way that he describes and really brings out some physicalities and has that voice. But
and he's been touring for, geez, I can't even remember how long.
Way longer
he's
than always, way longer always than on the anyone road. Ever thinks. It's like if you ask him, how what year did Reagan break? It's like,
forever.
Was it 2012? No.
No.
Right. No. Yeah.
And it's funny because he's never been in movies. He's never never been like the Jim Gaffigan. You know, I thought it was brilliant of Jim Gaffigan to come up with this break the fourth wall with that other voice he had. I thought that was pretty brilliant.
Keep talking about that.
I hate him. So I thought, I don't watch comedy, right? Okay. I think it kind
of. Do you feel like you get judged when you say that? Because I have said that too, and there are people like, but you're a comedian.
Yeah, but if I explain it, people understand it, right?
I don't listen to a lot of, you know, like I told you guys, I do a lot of podcasting.
Look, I'm a serial rapist.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I watch rapists.
Right. I don't listen to a lot of similar content that similar to what I record because, one, I don't want to be
influenced
mm-hmm. or, like, question what I'm doing because I'm like, oh, shit, like, they do something kind of similar. I don't want to deal with it. I just go with it. So I totally understand that. I feel sorry for you.
I know.
But I get it.
Well, and the other problem is that if you watch comedy, it's not the same thing as if you're there.
Yeah.
Right? So the special and you're by yourself, I love the psychology of comedy, not just the performance of it. Because mm-hmm. there's a whole other psychology that happens for me anyway, when you look at comedy. Number one, you know, you've got to be in the right environment, meaning that the room's got to be dark and you put the spotlight on where the focus should be in the room. Number one, the guy's got to have a good mic so that they're overpowering.
Right.
People like to laugh in the dark, so you know it's also very important. You know, and people if they think something's offensive, but they want to laugh, they want to be hidden from that. Mm-hmm. You know, so you know, for me, when I look at comedy, it's hard to do it by yourself because I'm not going to belly laugh the same way that I would if I was with these guys. If all three of us watched a special, that would be completely different.
But even then, we're all going to be like, oh, did you catch that?
Right.
We all caught that, didn't we?
And the other problem, and we had this on the way up here, is everybody always accuses you of you know, stealing jokes, right? So every other comic that sees somebody else successful, not all of them.
It's just parallel thinking.
I would agree.
Yeah.
But you know what?
I've had the same thing happen. I made a joke on this show, and then I watched a Zach Galifianakis special that I'd never seen, and he made the exact same joke.
Sure.
And it's like, okay, well, that was weird.
But it doesn't take any credit from yours not being funny or not.
I'm not interesting Carlos Mencia.
Stand-up comedians are one of the few people that their sets don't get copyrighted mm-hmm. and that there's no union for stand-ups.
Yeah.
So I think that's interesting because there is a bigger picture even in the law that's like, we all get water cooler humor. Mm-hmm. And that's ultimately what stand-up is for the most part, unless you're talking about like your one-man shows and your character-driven things. It's stuff that the audience is going, I relate to that. Mm-hmm. That's why I think that's funny.
Yeah, and I think there's also this subconscious element that when you do watch all this comedy that you have a thought and you question yourself whether you're going to put it on the paper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So now all of a sudden you don't become an artist, you become an editor. And now all of a sudden if you're trying to create and edit at the same time, it's this clash of the process and you don't get anywhere. Mm-hmm. So for me to just kind of push that out and say, okay, you know, where did this come from? I'll put it out there until somebody told me they stole that. And I'm like, well, then prove it. But I like that. I like that that fresh psychology for me anyway of having stream of conscious and not worry about it.
Yeah.
And I think that the things just get stuck in your head. You know, you don't know where it comes from. You're like, I know I've heard that somewhere. And then you're like, no, maybe it's just your brain.
Right.
Yeah. Now, what's yours?
And I got to pick four.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, this is kind of like your
top. You can't leave Teddy Roosevelt.
It's like
Roosevelt
High Fidelity, like your top five albums, you know, that you take on a desert island. It'll constantly change. You'll maneuver it. I have to say number one will have to be Phil Hartman.
Okay.
Saturday Night Live. I grew up watching, you know, reruns of the originals. Then, you know, the Will Ferrell cast was when my brother was in high school. So that's when, you know, you sneak in and you hang out with your brother and his friends. And you're just like, they're all laughing at this. And guess this is comedy. And so, but then I found on my own, and because, like, my dad grew up with, like, the 75 to 80 when he was a teenager. And then I found on my own in Comedy Central, the they would, I feel like, hammer 87 to 92. Where you have Phil Hartman, John Lovitz, Dennis Miller, Dana Carvey, and then you get Mike Myers coming in. Then you get the bad boys of SNL, the Chris Rock, Sandler, Farley.
Right.
But I always...
Those were the years I grew up with.
And through all those years when I'd watch him and I'd pinpoint like, oh, okay, this is the end of Phil Hartman's run or this is the beginning. He was the constant in this. They came up with this term for him. He was the glue.
Yeah.
And he would lose himself in characters, but he also had this refined sense of comedy. And I think that was maybe the first time I had ever seen that, where it was someone that took it seriously but could still be silly. And there's just something I really respected about him and found funny. And the more that I dug into as well, I grew up as a kid loving the Pee Wee Herman show.
Okay.
And then to find out that he co-created the Pee Wee Herman show with Paul Rubens, I was like, oh, that's interesting. Okay. And then later to find out that he had this unreleased comedy album that was like radio show sketches that I just loved. So, yeah, Phil Hartman, honorable mention in that slot is for more modern SNL, is Bill Hader.
Okay.
Like, I love, you know, him writing for South Park. Just love Bill Hader. He's another glue that I admire. But for my four, Phil Hartman, Robin Williams. Love Robin Williams.
And the fact that he had to do that through whatever he was going through, I think, is just a tremendous testament to
him. Saw him on his last tour and actually got to spend about a half an hour with him after the show. And he was super giving and generous.
Yeah, he performed here in town at the college. And I know some people that got to meet him and just said how nice of a guy he was.
He wanted to hear, like, he... I've clearly understood for years of people being enamored with him, but he was genuinely, it felt like, so what do you do? Like,
tell me about you.
And then we'd talk about that, and then I'd feel like, well, afterwards I felt guilty because I was like, he doesn't care who I am or whatever. He's Robin Williams. But his performance.
It's Dale Carnegie right there.
I used to buy his HBO live performances on VHS and just wear them out. And I think Robin taught me, even if I didn't understand at the time, that percentages, you can fail with your jokes. And not fail, like bomb, like they were terrible, like there's still people that'll like something. But he told so many and so many varied things that he just rapid fired, did so much stuff. When you're done watching it, you're in a daze and you're like, oh,
he's exhausted.
How much of that did I think was funny?
Yeah.
And I saw him on his last tour right before he had his heart attack, and he did an hour and a half by himself as an older man and just nonstop energy running. And that's what Kim was saying, like, it's from a performance standpoint, it's a beautiful thing to hold and to see. And it's I think anybody that had him in their life I had him at different decades, you know. I had him as a little kid watching Mork and Mindy, Aladdin, got a little older, so then you get Dead Poets Society, Good Morning Vietnam, right. Good Will Hunting, and then you got a little old. Like, he was there. He had something that would just fit. I think it's sad the way he went. The kind of person you're like, oh, if I could have been there. Like, and just been like, no. But
right.
His disease and everything. Number three.
Way to bring it down.
I know.
Gee whiz.
Well, because I'm so stalling bummed. For time.
Well, they say alcohol is a depressant. So I'll take it the blame on this up. One.
Yeah. No. This Woo! Turns me around.
I am happy.
I think I have. And Robin was so smart and so fast with thoughts and train of thought. And like, it almost, when you're watching him perform, it's almost like you're watching him write and just get like hop on clouds to new thoughts. Mm-hmm. And another one that has the performance quality of that is Steve Martin.
Okay.
And got into him from watching SNL when he was doing his monologue.
And the King Tut and all that kind of stuff.
And just in the white suit. It's like, it's great to be here. Walk 2 feet. It's great to be here. Walk three. It's great to be here. Like, I was just like, oh, that's so stupid. Like, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's so genuine and like childlike. Like, the thing of, like, you can tell your grandmother these jokes. But then it's so meta and weird and a commentary on its anti-comedy a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And him on SNL, I didn't understand when I first was watching as a kid that he wasn't just a cast member who came back every now and then.
Right.
Because he was on so much. Then my dad was like, oh, you like him? I have his album, Let's Get Small.
Yeah.
Do you want to listen to that? Mm-hmm. And then I was like, that guy on just sound? Like, that's going to lose a lot. But then you hear it, and you can just picture.
Yeah, my dad has the same record.
It was awesome. So then for four, I feel like I grew up with Hope and Crosby, Bob Hope, and there's a lot of what, you know, Kim was saying is these comedians were performers. Like, Bob Hope performed all the time. Oh, Bob Hope or Seinfeld. Or Eddie Murphy.
Do you want to phone a friend?
What do you think? I mean, Bob Hope and Seinfeld.
I think Bob Hope, for the fact that he could take a subject and break it down into two lines and make a joke, I think was always brilliant. He broke a joke down into its just bare bones, but it was still funny, right? No big setup, no nothing. It was one liner
and charismatic.
And charismatic. You know, everybody loved him. I mean, it's a good choice. It's definitely different than the other ones.
Yeah, I'll go Bob.
Yeah, Hope. Get diversity involved.
Yep. So Bob Hope, Steve Martin, diversity.
Well, you
out of your four white men, let's get diversity in there. Yeah, Bob Hope, Steve Martin, Robin Williams, and Phil Hartman.
Okay.
You know, with the Steve Martin thing, I remember in second grade he had a TV show like that aired. Right, I think it was after the King Tut album. Mm-hmm. Then basically, I got my second grade teacher to let us perform that entire TV show in class.
Really? Huh. That's
cool. And she let me do that. So
you both had Robin Williams. What do you think about him stealing jokes then?
So I didn't want to tell the story that I knew from Pete Lee,
right?
Who is he was a feature act for a long time. He just did the Tonight Show.
Okay.
I don't want to say that this is verbatim from him. This is what I remember him telling me years ago, was that he was doing the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
And he was part of a showcase night. And when he got off stage, Robin Williams came up to him and said, that last bit you did is killer. And Pete Lee was like, oh, my God, thank you. So like, that is amazing. Mm-hmm. And Robin's like, I'm going to give you $500.
Yeah, I was going to ask, did he at least offer to buy it?
And Pete Lee said, wow. He's like, now even like you're telling me I did well and you want to buy. Thank you so much, but it's not for sale. It's my closer.
Yeah.
And Robin just looked at him and was like, okay, this is going to go down one or two ways. I'm doing Letterman tomorrow, so you're either going to have $500 and you can tell your friends that you're a contributing writer to Robin Williams and see me do it on Letterman, or you're not going to have $500 and you're going to see me do it on Letterman.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah. So, and then the follow-up he ended with, he didn't tell me what he decided. I guess I didn't. I don't know why I didn't even ask. Maybe I did at the time.
I think we all know what he decided.
Right.
And get the cred.
And get the story.
Yeah.
So you're right for Robin Williams. But then he also put a little addendum on that. He's like, Robin Williams is notorious in clubs in California and Hollywood, that a lot of club owners won't let him in.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
They said, Robin, you can't come in unless you're going to come up and do 30 minutes.
Right.
Basically, unless they're going to make money off of it.
Right, yeah.
Right. Hmm.
Interesting. Well, we talked some comedy Mount Rushmore. We're going to throw it back to the ongoing concept for song number two and a little bit of discussion about the song you're going to hear. This is You Will Go here on Drunken Lullabies.
Remember we had to change some of the chords progressions of the original demo riffs we recorded to go with the synth bass.
Yeah, it was weird because a lot of this stuff is me singing in a weird way that's not very normal to what I'm used to. Another thing, too, is there's a lot of synth bass, so Ian had to kind of figure out what to do in that aspect. So this was one of the first songs we wrote. I wrote it back right after we finished Handmade. I really wanted a lot of poppy elements to our song, so I kind of went for that.
This is the first song we actually wrote as a band.
It really is, sure. Yeah.
Well, yeah, Dawson had started working on it, and then we eventually all started collaborating together.
Yeah, this part with Andy screaming, this is something that, yeah, we had to figure out that part, which is kind of weird. It was just a different pace. I'm not used to. But I was reminiscing about life, so it was cool to kind of move on with something else that I'm not used to.
And the first part there where you say, get up off the ground, and then I say, if you could only see what you have found, I guess was our way of trying to get you to look forward, I guess, into the new project. And
of course, yeah. Yeah, it was a
moving forward.
Yeah.
This part of the song, I really didn't know what I was going to say, so I made this little guitar riff and then just kind of sang whatever I thought was on the top of my head. And this is literally me singing this line for the first time, and I didn't even know what I was going to say, really. And I just sang it, and it became something out of all of that.
The theme of the whole album.
The whole album came out of this one riff that I sang and didn't know what was going to happen when I pushed record, and I just sang it, whatever. And we just expanded on it, so that's a really cool start to the album. That's awesome. I'm very happy with that.
Yeah, it's kind of cool that we used this as the first song of the album, because it was the first song in general.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. An introduction to everything new about the band.
Yeah, definitely a good intro to the album.
Yeah, and it's a good song. I think it's a good song.
make a difference now. You can make a difference now. Places you have been made you who you are. You can make a difference now. Places you will go make you who you will become. Places you have been made you who you are.
And that was the ongoing concept with You Will Go. And we've got one more song from them in just a little bit. But we have one final beer from Distill. This is from the St. Dakara Reserve Sour Series. This is the Anastasi. And it is 11%. It is a barrel-aged sour imperial stout with cherries. Flavor profile, sour, dark, boozy, and heavy. And it is fairly new. Not a ton of check-ins, but it's available here at the brewery. And this was one that it's like smelling salts, kind of. I just
snapped my head back when
it, and it shocked me. But yeah, it's got like chocolate, oak, hint of sweetness.
It's like a campfire in your mouth,
and you know, little oaky. You know, some bitterness. But yeah, I figured we'd close it out strong. You got to have a strong closer.
Pinky out. Here's to you, gentlemen.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely some.
Hoo-wee.
I might have poured too much.
Ooh.
Ooh, that's not what I was expecting.
Me neither.
Yeah.
Based on the smell and the fact that.
The smell is deceiving.
Yeah, and then, it is.
Bite. Like, when it first hits your tongue, it's like a cherry. Little bit of a shock.
Like a little.
There's the chocolate.
Yep, on the finish.
God, that's good.
And boom goes the dynamite.
So yeah, sniff around the barrels in there while you're performing. No question. You may stumble across some similar beers
for like 20 minutes and start sniffing that wood.
There's a show title right there.
Sniffing that wood.
Yep, that's
like the category, and I think never mind. Go ahead.
So you guys have been doing the tour for a little while. You have dates through July. You're visiting, I believe, at least four other states aside from Illinois. Where can people, one, find all this information? And for the lazy ones, why don't you kind of give them an idea where you might be headed next?
Facebook. Well,
Facebook is one, yeah.
Facebook.com/brewcrewcomedy.
Right.
And then after this airs, we are in... a different lineup is in Spoonwood Brewing in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
On April 28th. You can look at our events on our Facebook comedy, or our Facebook Brew Crew comedy page. And May 5th, we're in Guardian Brewing in Muncie, Indiana, home of Muncie. Isn't that home of David Letterman?
I believe so, yeah.
He went to Ball State.
Ball State. And, you know, May 19th, Brew Crew Comedy Tours in Bouchieri Vineyards and Winery in Spotsville, Kentucky, where we were told to be, please be clean.
Clean, clean, clean. Clean, clean.
Now, how blue do you guys work?
Not that blue. Mostly innuendos.
I like to ride the edge of like, oh, is he going to go over or is he not? You know, I did a church show where there was a priest in the crowd, and he says, I thought you were going to go over, son, but you never did. I enjoyed your comedy real much.
I just do 20 minutes of 9/11 stuff. So. Yeah. It's mostly just asking, what happened to Building 7? You know? So strap in for that.
I'm pretty clean. I think if I feel that the audience wants maybe a little bit of language, it can be peppered into what I already have.
But that's not dirty.
No, it's not.
See, that's...
But that's just seasoning.
The thing is, like, with these places, there's two places that specifically asked. One place was the all clean, no F word.
Okay.
And the other place was just, like, clean-ish, no F word.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's weird
so
that
you can say ass.
But
and there's yeah. and
but,
I think
butts always gets butts, laughed. Butts,
and so and butts. You know, and I think some comics have that gratuitous F bomb that they just randomly put in there or
like
swear
a PG
word.
13 movie. You get
yeah,
one.
But yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. And I got this from Ari Spears, you know, depending on the audience, sometimes, you know, the audience just wants it like a buffet. They want to see it. If they don't like it, they want to move on, and you better be quick about it. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, there's sometimes where the swearing is just a function of just getting your attention because maybe there's chatter, maybe there's, you know, so subconsciously people will hear that and, you know, kind of break from what they're doing to come back to the show. I don't think any of us really, you know, go dirty, but no. Yeah, sometimes I think the swearing is a tool. I don't think it's necessarily a crutch.
It's just an attitude you're presenting. Yeah. So. Sometimes it's needed.
And I'm a badass.
You a bad boy.
Badass motherfucker. We are going to be back, for anybody who's listening and is a fan of Distill or lives within driving distance and wants to come. A new lineup of this Brew Crew Comedy Tour is coming back June 9th.
Awesome.
Two shows.
It's two shows.
An early show, because this one sold out, so hopefully we'll sell out these two shows. An early show probably at 6, and a later show at either 8:30 or 9.
Okay.
Just follow us. Stay up to date when tickets go on sale for those, and you'll find out those times.
And Dustin, thank you very much for the promo that you gave. I think you were part of the ticket selling here, and that prompted the two shows going forward because they haven't even seen us yet.
Right.
So, you know, don't tell anybody. Right? But they were pretty quick to put on more shows and so forth. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're
for
very
that.
Welcome.
I love when you're going to record an extra little bit to attach to this. They're like, so that show happened later that night. They will not be back.
Quick addendum. Yes.
Quick scheduling update.
Whoops.
So,
yikes.
Yeah, it's you'll find that info. We'll be sharing it once it gets announced and tickets are on sale. You'll find it on the Drunken Lullabies page as well. But yeah, it's awesome that you guys already have a return visit plan, so
we're supposed to even have more.
Yeah, so thanks to Distill for that. I mean, yeah, you know, for them
huge.
To go
Ariel,
both
Alex,
feet in,
both have been awesome at championing and putting all this together. So we just hope to keep on bringing even more funny and other comedians that we haven't even necessarily worked with yet to this. I've actually had a couple people reach out that we'll have to travel some distance, and they're like, if you're doing another show at Distill, I would love to come on that show and do that. And
excellent.
I was like, oh, that would be amazing.
Very, very cool. Well, this beer, this is...
It'll get you, man. Yeah. I tell you what, this could be a surprise when you're not expecting
if
it.
If you get a pour of this downstairs, you're not going to get a big 16-ounce pour
but
of
I tell
this,
you what, too many of these, it could be sneaky.
Yeah, yes. you're toasted.
Yeah, I could.
Yeah.
So I could drink that.
Are we going to go get some more of these?
Yeah. Show's going to be real weird. Hey, welcome to Brew Crew Show. I'm Bill B.
It's brought to you by Distill. And this is brought to you. This mess is brought to you by Distill. Well, we've got one last song from our band of the week, The Ongoing Concept. And they actually shot me a message about some of their favorite beers. Ian, who plays bass for the band, he said, even though we do consume cheap beer on a regular basis while on tour, we do have a few of our favorite craft breweries that I can share with you. Even though they are titans of the craft beer industry, Dogfish Head always delivers great flavorful beer. I'm a big fan of the Indian Brown Ale and the Midas Touch, which is a mead-infused ancient recipe. One of the main breweries that we spend our time at is Selkirk Abbey, which is apparently in northern Idaho. Their award-winning beer is fantastic, and they only brew with Belgian-style yeast. My personal favorite is the St. Thomas, which is a dark saison, and their barrel-aged Gilt, which is a coffee porter aged in bourbon barrels. Literally the most delicious beer I've ever tasted, but I'm sure there is more tasty out there. Always, you know, you got to chase that dragon. You can't just...
you're never going to catch a dragon.
Yeah, that's what Untappd was created for. It's craft beer Pokemon Go.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is.
So, all right, well, we're going to let the guys tell you a little bit about the next song, and then you'll hear it one last time. It's The Ongoing Concept with Off the Cuff here on Drunken Lullabies.
talk about.
Did you ask me if I fart a lot?
No, I said, could we get one? Because you probably got
I
one
can't.
Packed around. Somewhere.
I can't. I've barely eaten cheese today.
Damn.
Sorry, guys.
This song is Domesticated.
No, this song's called Off the Cuff.
Or Off the Cuff. messed it up. So this is a song that Andy really came up with, and I think this is an amazing song. Andy, go ahead. Talk about it.
Really not much to say. It's called Off the Cuff. Pretty much explains it. This was the last song that we wrote for the album. We kind of needed to come up with it last minute. So I had some riffs that I thought were cool that we just threw together in a very short amount of time. In the lyrics, we kind of did the same thing.
Yeah.
We literally did it off the cuff.
I mean, yeah.
Night.
That's kind of the point.
I remember we were recording bass. It was like 3 a.m. and you and I were falling asleep, but we like had to finish it because we had like a deadline. And I didn't remember what I recorded like the next day. Mm-hmm. So then when we went to play it live, I had to go back through and try to figure it all out again.
Us three, we did lyrics, right? And what we did was we just made up crap. We literally made up just random stuff.
I'm speaking off the top of my head.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, we're exactly. Just, that was what it was. And it was
literally about what was going on at the time when we wrote it.
The result of procrastinating.
It's actually a nice break in the set, like when we play this live.
I think it's the most genuine collaboration of the four of us.
I think so, too.
On the album, it really...
Yeah, because nothing was overthought at all.
No.
I think the fade-out of this song actually makes it better, because we had nothing else to do. We didn't
know
what
to do. Yeah.
It actually fits. I didn't even think about that.
Just fade it out.
Let's
just
fade it out. Yeah.
That's true.
If you guys ever...
Very sincere song.
It is very sincere. It was very emotional. It was literally our lives for like a week. If you ever hear the song live, it does not fade out. Have you guys ever heard a band?
It just goes forever, actually.
Yeah, no, we just continue. That's the whole set.
We on the set. We just go to
someone it. Comes and turns the volume down on our amp slowly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or they just cut the power. No. Yeah, that's a good song. Cool.
Don't know what I'm going to say next. Yeah.
And that, for the last time this episode, was the ongoing concept with Off the Cuff. Thank you again to those guys. And if you like what you heard, go check out the new album, Places, on Solid State Records. You can find it wherever you find your music, digital or otherwise. And if you want to know some other music picks, what I've been digging for the last couple weeks, Guided by Voices has a new album out called Space Gun, probably their first of 17 albums they will put out this year. The Last Gang, Keep Them Counting. That is a female-fronted punk band out of California, I believe. If you're a fan of like the Distillers and that kind of sound, go check them out. Wonder Years put out a new album, Sister Cities, that came out about a week and a half ago. And the Fratellis, In Your Own Sweet Time. You probably know the Fratellis if you're a Chicago Blackhawks fan and you hear Chelsea Dagger every time they score a goal. Well, guess what? They have a lot more songs than just that one. So check them out as well. And again, we want to encourage you to check out the Brew Crew comedy tour. So again, go look up those dates. And check out their own individual pages, and we're going to let everybody give their plugs here. So why don't you start, Kim? Where can people find you?
Facebook, of course. Everything I do is under the moniker Kim E. Sherwood, no spaces. That's K-I-M, the letter E, Sherwood, S-H-E-R-W-O-O-D. That's YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and I also have a podcast called the One Hot Mess Podcast, and you know you have the right one when you see a dorky guy peeking out from a big pile of dung, otherwise known as the poop emoji. That is my moniker for that podcast.
We have tons of poop emoji stuff in the house. The kid at home.
The big pillow that everybody loves. The big pillow.
He's got slippers. He's got those new things that all the kids are crazy about, the squishies or whatever. He's got
Tide Pods?
Yeah, Tide Pods.
Okay.
Condoms, the snort,
yeah.
Snort those ones? Yeah, okay.
He's got a poop emoji, one of those. But yeah, we have all that fun stuff. I'm surprised he wasn't the poop emoji for Halloween, to be honest with you. Maybe this year.
Yeah. Your costume, shit. Yeah.
Thank you.
Hit
I tried
nail
real hard.
On the head. Billy, how about you?
You can follow me at WilliamTheFour on Instagram and Twitter. I also have two podcasts that you can listen to. The one I'm working on right now is called The New Nasty Boys. It is where my buddy Lee Kimbrell and I are roasting every team in Major League Baseball and talking about our hometown Cincinnati Reds and how the season's progressing and what we think is happening.
So it's not about the former WWF Tag Team Champions.
It is not.
Oh, okay. That's a shame.
Sorry.
Yeah, how are the Reds doing?
Can we not talk about it right now?
Oh, okay.
Thank you. And then
The Cardinals ain't doing much better.
No, but you guys got that Jordan Hicks fella, and he's fun to watch.
Yeah.
Come out of the bullpen. And you can listen to Fuck You, We Like the Bengals. It is
good
a
for the kids.
Bengals pot. Yeah, it's perfect for children. If you have
Susanna
kids.
Hoffs, still hot all these years later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hazy shade of winter.
Yes. Yeah, it's
like
a bummer.
That. I like that.
Yeah. It's
I
where
love your pools.
Myself, Andrew Rudick, another Cincinnati comedian, Lee Kimbrell and myself, we roast every team the Bengals are playing throughout the season.
Okay.
So check those out.
All right.
I can be found, Ricky Glore, at Ricky Glore. That's R-I-C-K-Y-G-L-O-R-E.
You could sing that like Mickey Mouse.
R-I-C-K-E-Y-G-L-O-R-E.
See?
Holy shit, I never knew that.
Yeah. What?
You're welcome.
I should do it now.
That'll be $500.
Not gonna.
No.
Listen, he's gonna do Letterman next week.
It's yeah. True.
You got
true.
A choice.
You know, have you seen the Netflix show? Yeah. Like our,
that Barack Obama episode's amazing.
It is. Oh, very, so very good.
just tears the whole time. Just like, oh, this is how an articulate man in politics speaks.
Right. Yeah.
Interesting. It's been so long. We now live in Black Mirror, and I did not know. At Ricky Glore. Now people listen, it's like, well, not following him now, fucker. At Ricky Glore on Twitter, at Glore Ricky on Instagram. You can hit me up, Ricky Glore on Facebook. I just wrote a book with illustrations from some other local artists in Northern Kentucky called Napkin. I'm going to pronounce it wrong. It's that beer.
Mm-hmm.
A Thesaurus Is Not a Dinosaur and Other Napkin Thoughts by Ricky Glore, Sarah Laley, and Brian Laley. And it's actually a piece of my act that I do. I don't write my thoughts down on my cell phone. I actually doodle them on napkins. A lot of one-liners, mm-hmm. And so this book is that, but think of like Far Side.
Okay.
So it's those one-liner jokes or even just disconnected thoughts with illustrations next to them. It's a perfect toilet book.
And that's exactly where I'll put my copy of it that you gave to me.
In the toilet.
Prominently displayed on the back of the toilet in the Star Wars bathroom at Drunken Lullaby Studios.
And, so. And I have a podcast like everyone and their mom here called Cinema Toast Crunch Cast.
All right.
Remember that it's Crunch Cast because there is a Cinema Toast Crunch podcast.
Just all about cereal? Movies.
No.
Oh, okay.
But that's how we rate it.
Gotcha.
So we watch movies, and then at the end, we rate it soggy or crunchy. Okay. So it's basically a thumbs up, thumbs down.
Right, right.
And we've done a lot of horror movies. I've had some good guests. One interesting one was Sylvia Sage, the adult film actress, porn star, came on and talked Nightmare on Elm Street with us.
Interesting.
When I first hit her up, I knew that she did stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was contacting her to set the details in motion for the recording, I looked, and on her Facebook it said, stand-up comedian / adult film actress.
I bet her type 5 takes on a whole new meaning.
Ah, oh, good one.
I know. I'm just going to let that go. Yeah, I'm not going to talk anymore. That's it. Just check us out. Listen to us.
Excellent. And as you guys all know, I am a proud member of the Hopped Up Network, and you can check out the Hopped Up Network for a plethora of other craft beer-related podcasts, much like this one.
If you are looking for more beer podcasts just like the one you're listening to right now, then head on over to hoppedupnetwork.com. We are a podcast network focused on our local craft beer communities. Here's a quick example of one of the many podcasts you will find.
Are you a discerning beer drinker? Do you drink beer for the tastes of blackcurrant and old leather? Can you tell the difference between Simcoe and Citra hops, despite whatever type of beer you might be drinking? Yeah, sorry, that's not this podcast. You want to listen to somebody else. We here at the Speak Podcast do regular beer for regular people. Joe Sixpack Beer at Joe Sixpack Taste. That's Rob, Adam, and Pete, proud members of the Hopped Up Network.
Wasn't that a fun ad? Of course it was, because it comes from the Hopped Up Network. And again, thank you very much, guys, for joining me today here at Distill. And, trying some beers with me.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And
it's pretty awesome.
All of you guys, go check them out on social media. Come out to the next shows. Again, you can find all the details online. So, this is The Voice signing off from Distill Brewery saying, may your music be loud and your beers be cold. We'll see you in a week.